speak to us words of exhortation.
Thank you, Steve, very much. As always, lovely to be back amongst you here at Exeter. Thank you for your welcome and your invitation. And thanks for putting a bit of pressure on there, Steve.
Anytime.
Well, I thought that Simon read that Isaiah brilliantly. Isn't it remarkable to listen to it in a sort of an unfamiliar, very immediate sort of vernacular tongue? I think that message translation is incredible. Isaiah 58, what a chapter. So all I'll do this morning is draw out some of those words that Simon read, because we probably don't all have a message translation with us, to exhort us and bring us to bread and wine, to eat with Jesus. Because I think it's a remarkable message coming from Isaiah 58. I think it's one that Jesus absolutely echoes and stamps his authority and his take on. And here we have it. A major announcement about what true religion is. A shout. And I think Simon took us all a bit aback with his shout. That we have the great shofar trumpet being blown. The voice of God, the words of God. It's a major announcement and something that the people need to listen to and to think about. It's perhaps a surprising message. It gets at the way that God wants us to respond to him. We love God, we respect him incredibly. And what does he want from us? Well, he warns us to be wary of cheap oaths, cheap words. Be wary of second-guessing his requirements, his ways. And remember, importantly, that truth trumps rules, regulations, laws. If you read the Samuel reading this morning, or do today, in it, Saul makes a bold oath. Anyone who touches food before the Pharisees are vanquished must die. And of course, Jonathan eats some honey. Jonathan goes on this extraordinary one-man campaign in amongst the Philistines. In amongst the Philistines. What did I say? Pharisees. I've got them on my mind. They're coming in a minute. In amongst the Philistines, takes them on, kills 20 of their bravest, eats some honey to replenish himself, gets back to camp, and it transpires that Saul has made this oath that anyone who's touched food must die. The men of Israel say, no, you cannot kill Jonathan. This is preposterous. And they don't. Saul doesn't. There seems to be we don't hear the details of what goes on there, but it's significant that an oath to God, may God deal with me ever so severely if I do not kill anyone who touches food. But no, this is a kind of a lovely common sense here that says, be careful about the oaths that you make. Be careful about using the rules and the regulations in order to quash and suppress people and people's natural response to religion. I think that's a good lesson. Joseph, betrothed to Mary, he did something similar, didn't he? NIV says that he was faithful to the law, and therefore he wanted to quietly put her away before he got too deep in with a marriage and public humiliation. But he did some spirit-based thinking, and an angel whispered in his ear in the night, and he made a good decision. No, I'll forget your rules and regulations for a moment, and I will make a faithful, truthful decision to support Mary and take on some real social public stigma. So these sorts of decisions and situations tell us something about God. They tell us that we must be wary of appearing to be busy, busy, busy at worship. Wary and careful of having a religious response which is based around appearances. You can see why we had the Christmas carol this morning, because of Matthew 2. Nice to get out a Christmas carol during the summer, I always find. And isn't that little episode with the wise men frightening, when Herod says, "Tell me ways, because I want to worship him too." And that sort of, that's a horrible thing to encroach into this lovely episode where the Son of God is being born and we have this evil tyrant pretending to want to worship but only wanting to destroy. It's quite shocking, it's quite jarring. In a way, it's the equivalent of the fall in Eden at the beginning, where that knowledge-based instinct of disobedience creeps in to a very good situation. Finds its parallel in Herod in Matthew 2. Someone said this last week to me, and I think there's something in it. I'm afraid that our human natural instincts and tendencies draw us towards a Pharisaical type of religious life. I think that's our natural human tendency. I'm still thinking about it. I'm not sure, but I think there is something in what he said. We must be on guard against the Pharisaical tendencies. We must beware of traditions that become too all-encompassing and be prepared to create new traditions. Not here just to do ritual, but here to know and explore the truth and the meaning behind ritual. Where is the purpose? Where is the actual meaning behind this lovely little ritual that Jesus has instituted for us? And so God scorns their fast days, which are all about appearances, and he says, "This is the kind of fast day I'm after." And we have this lovely list of thinking about how we treat people in the workplace, freeing the oppressed, breaking the bands and the manacles and the chains of injustice in our societies, in our communities, and cancelling debts, which is a great theme of Jubilee and of the kind of law that God wants. I think this is a fundamental and a wonderful message of Judaism, and it's absolutely taken on in Christianity. And this is the driving force, the engine of our religion. And I'm very happy to have Isaiah 58. These lovely words here: share your food with the hungry and give shelter to the homeless. What I'm interested in seeing you do, says God, through Isaiah, is inviting the homeless poor into your homes, putting clothes on the shivering ill-clad, and being available to your own family. This is a very human, very social message. And it's one that God says gives him joy and will fulfill our spiritual lives. Do this and the lights will turn on. This is the sort of turn of phrase that we come to love from Eugene Peterson, the guy who heads up the Message translation, which only took about 2 or 3 years to create the Message Bible, which is extraordinarily short for a translation project of that size. But the words just seem to tumble out of him. I think he pretty much single-handedly translated the New Testament in about 6 months. The NIV renders this that your light will break forth like the dawn, your healing will quickly appear, righteousness before you, the glory of God behind you. You will call and I will answer. Lovely, it's a lovely idea, isn't it? Very poetical. And he continues, generous with the hungry, start giving yourselves to the down and out, and your lives will begin to glow. This lovely idea of the light of God being switched on in our lives, and then our own beings starting to glow, and out of the shadows and bathed in sunlight. It can seem a bit sort of motherhood and apple pie, this message. of being kind, generous, at random acts of kindness. But it is, I think, instructive that Jesus sets up a judgment picture for us with the sheep and the goats, where the judgment criteria is all about giving water to the thirsty in my name, seeing a stranger, inviting them in my name, clothing the naked, visiting the imprisoned, comforting. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. So I think it's true that Jesus does echo Isaiah 58. I think he makes it the core of his message and the core of his saving message and the basis of how he wants our Christianity to be. We can think about these concepts as well. Perhaps interpret this as a responsibility to be this type of person within our own collegial community and beyond as well. Known as those who can fix things, restore things, rebuild and renovate things. A very constructive community persona. Someone said, in talking about the first century church, that to be a part of this early church was to join a countercultural society that was partnering with God to create a new kind of culture. He says, because the Christians made sure that before they sat down to break bread and drink wine, they made sure that everyone had enough to eat, that everyone's bills were paid, that someone who was lonely or needed something had company or what they needed. So the resurrection for them was not an abstract spiritual concept. It was not an ideas-based religion. It was a social, economic reality. That's what Christianity was in the first church. That's what drew people to it. 3,000 people in a day. The teaching it's fundamental, it's important, and it's happening this afternoon in God's master plan. But there's an underlying foundational generosity of spirit in Christianity. And that's what made people fascinated by them, amazed by them, desperate to be part of this project. Because we know then that the spiritual rewards are abundant. You'll be free to enjoy God. I'll make you ride high and soar above it all. And we know how important the bird in flight, and particularly the eagle in flight, is to this Israeli poetry in the New Testament. God describes himself as the mother eagle, the soaring eagle with the wings wrapped around, and that he will lift us up on eagle's wings. And I'm suggesting that we can do that, enjoy it, and share it, and have easier access to it if we can carry out the kind of fasting that God wants. Release the oppressed. Open our homes and our hearts. So, let's break bread together. And a little poem here that I discovered, which I think is rather nice as a way of thinking about the way that we can exercise this generosity and this spiritual love amongst the people around us and be the hands and feet of Jesus. Christ has no body now but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the hands through which he blesses all the world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Christ has no body now on earth but yours.